There we go. Hey, greetings, truth seekers. Happy Friday, or should I say good Friday to you. See? I know what to say. Good Friday and happy Pesach. You should not be listening. You should be enjoying your Seder. Brad Friedman here, live broadcasting from the left coast for Mike Malloy tonight. He has the night off. He's enjoying a good Friday. Glad you could join us here. I am broadcasting from the left coast. That's me, Brad Friedman of bradblog.com, your friendly citizen investigative journalist, blogger, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow in for the next 3 hours tonight. And, oh, we're going to be doing a lot of investigating. Speaking of people who know me, who know bradblog.com, well, if you like journalism, if you like investigation, you've come to the right place, because we're going to be doing quite a bit of that tonight. I've got more show than I can possibly fit into 3 hours. So we may have to invoke the secret Mike Malloy fourth hour. Don't be alarmed, affiliates. You'll know what to do. Our phone number tonight, don't use it just yet because I got a lot to get to, is 877-520-1150 if you want to write it down. 877-520-1150 is the number. Our chat room is available tonight at bradblog.com. If you stop on by, the very top item all lit up for you there. Click on through and you'll find the chat room. And if you can't find your way to the chat room, we don't want you there. Okay, we want you there. So stop on by the chat room. Dez is in there, I think. For Earth, our usual moderator, she's under the weather tonight. So our best to her. Hope she feels better. Come back soon. We miss you already. And okay, what else do I have? Oh, the Twitters. You can find me on the Twitters at the Brad Blog if you'd like to sound off while we're unable to go to the phones. Early on here. Later on, we're definitely going to go to the phones. We'll get a lot of your calls, a lot of your thoughts on all the stuff we have to talk about today, and all the stuff that you'd like to talk about that I didn't talk about, because these are your public airwaves. And as I like to say, use them before you lose them more than you already have. We're broadcasting here from the beautiful studios of KTalk AM 1150, actually in Wonder Woman Stephanie Miller's current TV now radio studio out here in Burbank, and we have a separate mic and headphones set up just in case Elijah comes in tonight. I'm pausing for all the Jews who are laughing out there right now. That was a good one, wasn't it, Jews? Yeah, I know. So just in case Elijah may be here, but if Elijah isn't here, we can definitely count on some other guests we'll be having momentarily. I'll be speaking with Pamela Smith of VerifiedVoting.org and Dan McCrae of the Florida Voting Foundation. We'll also be speaking with Gabriel Ray Goodlatte is how it's spelled. Sounds delicious. He'll be joining us to talk about the campaign against ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, which is having a great deal of success as of today. Now, the fourth major sponsor of this right-wing group, American Legislative Exchange Council, has dropped out. The fourth, there may have been even more in the past few hours. I don't know. But Intuit has now dropped out. Way to go, Intuit. Intuit makes TurboTax and Quicken. They join Kraft Foods and Coca-Cola and Pepsi, who have all said no to these right-wingers over at the American Legislative Exchange Council, who are behind, among other legislative efforts around the country, the effort to keep you from being able to cast your legal vote. Yes, they are sponsoring, they are pushing these polling place photo ID restriction bills, which are meant to keep you from voting. And they are already doing that. A couple of weeks ago in Wisconsin, they had a primary, a small municipal primary, actually. A lot of people were turned away from the polls. Luckily, the Wisconsin bill restrict people with photo IDs at the polling place has been overturned for the moment. Several injunctions have been put on it in several different cases after it was found to be unconstitutional, according to Wisconsin state law. That said, people are still getting turned away from the polls in Wisconsin under this photo ID law that is supposed to be on hold. An 87-year-old woman was turned away Tuesday because she didn't have her photo ID, even though the law is on hold. But maybe things are getting better in Wisconsin. Kathy Nicholas, America's favorite county clerk. As of last night, we had the breaking news at Brad Blog. We're going to talk about that a little bit later. Kathy Nicholas is stepping aside. She of the famous Wisconsin Supreme Court case, she's stepping aside for the upcoming recall elections. That announcement was made yesterday, 1 year since, exactly 1 year since Wisconsin's Supreme Court debacle last year. We're going to be talking about that with John Washburn, who knows Kathy Nicholas quite well. And, Margo Paez, I hope, will be joining us with an update on the Santa Monica College pepper spray incident. Your militarized post-9/11 police force gone wild in Santa Monica. Unbelievable story. So we'll have information on that. But first, we're moving down to Palm Beach, Florida, because this story affects the entire nation, and I mean the entire nation. March 13th, they had an election down in Palm Beach County, and the optical scan, that's paper ballots, the paper ballot optical scan voting system announced three people as winners who didn't actually win their election. That's right. A lot of people think you got a paper ballot, you don't have to worry. Well, no, because in most places in this country, paper ballots are counted by optical scan computers. And nobody checks them afterwards. And I have been talking about this for years here on the Mike Malloy Show, at bradblog.com, on my own radio show here in Los Angeles on KPFK, warning people about this for years. When you hear CNN does this little countdown till polls close and then they announce the winner, please know that when they do that, they have not actually counted any ballots yet. They're either working from the exit polls, which they used to tell us are not accurate, or they're working from the optical scan computers or the touchscreen computers, the central tabulators, which are telling us who won and who lost. But the fact is, they don't actually examine the paper ballots to find out if the person the computer announced as the winner actually was the winner. And I've been warning about this, and what happened March 13th in Palm Beach County, three contests had the incorrect winner named, and it took a hand count, luckily, when they found out, to clear up the mess. We're going to be talking about that because those same machines are used in 14 states around the country, including Wisconsin. Much more on that straight ahead. I'm Brad, in for Mike. Told them you were living downtown. Driving all the old men crazy. The boys are back in town. The boys are back in town. Yeah. All right, welcome back to your Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com sitting in for Mike. Mike will be back Monday, never fear. Until then, you got me, and your worst nightmare has come true. No, not me here, but paper ballot elections that are counted by computers, naming the loser as the winner. That has happened. That just now happened in Palm Beach County, Florida. We reported it this week at bradblog.com. I spoke with the supervisor of elections down there about what happened. Those machines, those same machines that named the people incorrectly as the winners, are going to be used in 285 jurisdictions around the country, including swing states like Florida, Idaho, Illinois, Louisiana, Arizona, California, Michigan, Missouri, New Jersey, Oregon, Pennsylvania, Virginia, and almost all of Wisconsin, where the GOP primary was this week and where the recalls are coming up. I spoke with Pamela Smith from VerifiedVoting.org and Dan McCray, the president of the Florida Voting Foundation, about this mess earlier this week on my KPFK show. Here is my conversation with them about what the hell happened in Palm Beach County. Pam and Dan, welcome, both of you.
Thanks, Brad.
Hi, Brad. Nice to be with you.
Hey, great to have you here. Okay, well, let's start specifically with Dan in Florida before we broaden it out to the rest of the country a little bit. Dan, one of the problems that came up in Florida when they discovered that the wrong winners had been declared, or I should say the losers had been declared the winner. One of the problems in the state of Florida is that, incredibly, that state has just 6 days to certify their election. How can a full audit and canvass possibly be done if the election has to be certified in 6 days? And when did we get this crazy law in the Sunshine State that only gives 6 days to look at any election?
Yeah, it's 6 days in a primary and 11 and a half days, oddly enough, in a general election. And the law's been on the books for some time, and we've advocated for some time that it needs to be longer in order for elections officials to have time to do good work like we want them to do.
So this would include 11, what'd you say, 11 and a half days?
Yeah.
11, okay. 11 and a half days when we get to the November presidential election. To go back, and though I know it's only one or two counties actually in Florida which use the Sequoia system, I think the rest use ESNS optical scanners, which, by the way, are equally, if not more, flawed. But they'll have just 11 days to canvass the race and to go back and make sure we don't have another Palm Beach County type situation. And I guess I should specify a Palm Beach County March 13th situation as opposed to a Palm Beach County butterfly ballot 2000 presidential election situation. 11 and a half days. Will that be enough so that voters in the rest of the country even can have confidence that Florida got it right this time in 2012?
Well, no, it's not enough. And there's a greater problem, and that is that Florida has a weak audit provision in its statutes right now. That needs to be strengthened, but even more incredibly, the audit takes place after the election is certified, which is, you know, closing the door after the horses have gone.
So they don't even try to do it in those either 6 days or 11 and a half days prior to the certification? They don't do the post-election, you call it audit, I call it a spot check?
That's correct. They don't. And you're right. A spot check is a better word for it, a better term for it, until and unless we get a more significant, a more robust audit that actually tells us with a high level of statistical confidence that the election reported accurate results.
Let me turn to Pam Smith, Verified Voting. So, Pam, how common, you know, I spoke with the supervisor of elections in Palm Beach County, Susan Booker. She told me earlier this week that she said, quote, "I have a feeling that this isn't the first time that this has happened, but we never noticed." How common are these kinds of problems with paper ballot op-scan computers, and can we even know how common they are, Pam?
Well, I think you're onto something. It may not be possible to know just how common they are. There are a couple of checks and tests that election officials regularly do, the first one more than the second one. The first one is that they'll do a pre-election test, which will sometimes catch errors and problems in the way that the ballot has been programmed and similar instances. But the kinds of pre-election tests that typically get done may not be robust enough to catch the kinds of problems that we saw in this recent election. What's more, the second type of test, which is a post-election audit, and as Dan described, they can be anywhere from this very minimal spot check to something really quite robust, which would be an audit that limits the risk of finding the wrong, that the wrong outcome occurred. Those are not done in every jurisdiction that has this type of system, and they need to be. There is no benefit to having a record that documents the voter's intent if no one's going to check that record of voter intent against the counting system. Now, I'm not for a minute saying we couldn't do a manual count up front, but if you don't, you absolutely must do some kind of robust audit to make sure your system is counting correctly and that you're capturing any possible errors and problems.
Well, and see, that's my concern. Again, speaking with Susan Booker the other day, you know, she had said she had been doing these pre-election tests that you referenced, Pam Smith, these logic and accuracy tests, which they're supposed to run They're supposed to run them on every machine used to make sure that they tabulate correctly. She was doing them as per the industry standards. And now she told me that it was because of the way they were doing those pre-election tests that they didn't catch this problem in advance. But, you know, she stressed that these people who run elections, you know, they're not IT folks. They're not technological wizards. They've been doing these pre-election tests theoretically for years, and yet the tests were still not good enough to catch something like this that could have been found had the tests been more robust. What gives you confidence that even if we did have post-election spot checks or audits, that election officials would be able to, you know, to pull them off in such a way that we would discover problems like this, Pam?
Well, I think that I don't think you could say that I have the fullest of confidence. I do believe most election officials are working very hard to try and do their job well, and if they, mm-hmm. they have the tools to do their job well, they really can. The industry standard for pre-election testing is not robust enough. They were really actually very fortunate to have found this.
Yeah, they were very fortunate indeed. They found it only because Florida now added this post-election audit, and they got lucky at that. That was my interview, or part of my interview with Pamela Smith from the president of Verified Voting, and Dan McCray, the president of Florida Voters Foundation. The fact is, these machines that failed in Florida that we were lucky enough to catch are also used all across the country. They're going to be used in Wisconsin coming up in the recalls and in 14 different states. I'm going to continue with that conversation, that interview, when we get back from the break. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. Lots of investigations to come tonight on this Good Friday and this Happy Pesach. Glad you could join us. Stay with us. Much more straight ahead. There we are, changing the world. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. If you care, I'm broadcasting tonight here on the Mike Malloy Show from Stephanie Miller's current TV studio, and I just let a picture fly on the Twitters at the Brad Blog if you want to see the photo. Okay, we're going back now to Palm Beach County, Florida. My interview with Pamela Smith of VerifiedVoting.org and Dan McCray of the Florida Voters Foundation, FloridaVoters.org. These machines down in Palm Beach County in their March 13th election named three races incorrectly. In other words, people who lost the elections were named as the winners on election night, and they only found out afterwards, days afterwards, when they bothered to count a few of the paper ballots down there in Florida, where they're now allowed to do a post-election audit of 2% of the paper ballots. If they want to do a full hand count, they actually have to go to court to get permission to do this. Now, in this case, don't blame Palm Beach. Don't blame Florida. Blame the Sequoia Voting Systems Company, which is now owned by Dominion Voting. These systems are used all across the country. The software got it wrong. It's called the software that Sequoia uses to tabulate the races is called WinEDS. And it's also used up in the state of Wisconsin, where we just had the GOP primaries this week and where the recall elections will be held coming up in starting next month. In Wisconsin, these same machines. Now, in Wisconsin, they don't bother to actually count the paper ballots, to check the paper ballots the way they happen to do down there in Palm Beach County. So the question that I was asking, and we'll pick up this interview from earlier this week that I did with Pam Smith and Dan McCray on KPFK. I was asking Pam Smith if she, the head of VerifiedVoting.org, has any confidence whatsoever in the results when they're reported by the computers in the state of Wisconsin.
So with that in mind, Pam Smith, are you confident that the race, for example, that was called last night in Wisconsin, the GOP primary, was actually called accurately? Or do we have a Palm Beach County situation where the wrong winner was the wrong person was named the winner?
I think you're right. I think we have to say that the public deserves to have justifiable confidence in the outcome, in the accuracy of the outcome. And when we say justifiable, there has to be some evidence base for that confidence. And if you're not deriving any kind of evidence base until months after the election, or not doing it at all for a particular election, then where's the justification to have confidence?
Well, so in other words, do you have confidence? I realize I'm holding your feet to the fire here, Pam, but do you have confidence in the results that we were told about last night coming out of the state of Wisconsin based on the same op scanners that failed down in Florida?
I think it would be true based on any op scanner. I don't think you can have confidence in that outcome unless you've had a way to check it. It's that simple.
Speaking with Pam Smith of Verified Voting and Dan McCray of the Florida Voters Foundation. Dan, I understand that hand counts in the state of Florida have now been made illegal. Even if an election administrator wants to count an election by hand, even in a close race where candidates would like to have ballots counted publicly, that is now illegal in the state of Florida. When did that happen, and how could that possibly happen, Dan?
It's Florida. What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, it's a good thing we don't have close elections there where a hand count might be useful.
Or that it's a big, gigantic swing state.
Uh-huh, that's right.
Well, since 2000 and the debacle of 2000, the feds have done certain things and the state of Florida has done certain things. None of them have been effective enough because here we are talking about this more than a decade later. The state of Florida has done a couple of things. If you remember in 2000, the issue was there were multiple sets of rules for recounting across the counties. That was part of the problem, is there wasn't a uniform standard. And so, therefore, it made the clock run differently for the different counties, and it made the standard of evaluating ballots different for different counties. And eventually, that's the sort of thing the Supreme Court hung its hat on when it intervened. So what's Florida done since then? Well, for one thing, it was very embarrassed, and it doesn't want to be embarrassed anymore.
Too late. Go ahead.
So in its wisdom, the Florida legislature has spent a fair amount of its time ensuring there will not be embarrassment, more than that necessarily elections go well. I hate to be that critical, but I'm afraid that that's what's indicated here. The standards now are uniformly simple. They're absolutely uniform across the state. They do things like if there is a half a percentage difference in the count, then the ballots are run back through the same optical scanners, and the essentially the same results almost always come out. If they are
so, in a case like Dan, let me just correct this. In a case like this, where Palm Beach County, where the computers had declared three people who didn't win to be the winners, if those elections had been close, they would have taken those paper ballots, run them through the same op scanners, and probably got the same results where the wrong candidates were declared the winners.
Correct. And so, what you say is correct. There is nowhere in the legal procedure now that where a proper hand recount can even happen.
Susan Booker, the supervisor of elections out there, told me she had to go to court. They had to actually go to court to get permission. They knew that the computer was counting wrong, but they actually had to go to court to get permission to count it by hand. She said that she was also a legislator at the time that the law was, that some of these laws were passed, that this 2% post-election spot check law was passed. She said she had no idea that it would be a problem. She had no idea as a legislator that, you know, that these things would, the certification would take place before they had a chance to do the audit. We're allowing these people who have absolutely no knowledge of how elections work determine election laws instead of trusting the people to count the ballots, to put an end to this nonsense, this stuff that I know that I've been covering going on a decade now. Dan, I know you've been working on it in Florida for years upon years. Pam Smith, you know, the same thing can be said of verified voting. So my question to you both as we're wrapping up this segment here, is enough enough? When can we just start, you know, hand counting paper ballots in front of the people at the precinct when the polls close so that we have democracy's gold standard, so we don't have to go, you know, through this rocket science, these post-election audits, if we're lucky to get them, that can be gamed? Can't we just finally simplify this mess? Wouldn't we all be better off if that was the case? And let me go to each of you on this before we have to go. Pam, I know you've been working on improving the computer voting that we do have. But after looking at the problems that we seem to have year after year that don't seem to get any better, wouldn't we all be better off just hand counting paper ballots?
You know, I'll tell you, elections have to be resilient against the kinds of malfunctions that we've seen and the kinds of malfeasance that we know is possible. And in the instance like what happened in Susan Butcher's county, these are the kinds of incidents that actually drive change. It's my sense, my takeaway, that if a jurisdiction is going to switch from their electronic counting system to a hand-counted system, this would be the kind of thing that would drive them to it. So I'll be very interested to see what transpires next in Palm Beach and elsewhere.
Well, as the president of a foundation with the word verified voting in it, it seems to me that the only way that we could truly verify the results is to hand count. And I don't come at that that thought lightly. It's taken years and years looking at the possibilities and just seeing things get worse, not better. Dan, I know it's illegal to hand count right now in the state of Florida, but would you be happier if all paper ballots were counted in front of, you know, actual human beings on election night at the polling place with results posted there before ballots moved anywhere?
You know, it takes us back to talking about mere mortals. Whatever we do, mortals, normal people, regular guys on the street, should be able to understand and have confidence in the election. Hand counting every ballot is one way, and it's certainly a standard against which everything else should be measured. I think there are technologies that can do that in a way that's clearly understandable, that everybody can have confidence in, and that may be faster and less expensive, less cumbersome, and therefore they bring their own advantages to the table.
Faster, but, and let me ask, let me just ask you, faster and less expensive than hand-counting paper ballots at the precinct on election night?
There's a lot of criticism. There's a lot of pushback out there.
What technology would that be?
Post-election audits. Good, solid post-election audits. They are not complicated. They are not cumbersome. They're not expensive. They're not slow.
Well, they're not slow, but they don't take place on election night. We've got chain of custody issues that come into play. Post-election audits can be gamed even when they're done very well. There are ways to game them. And ultimately, even if they're not gamed, the question that the people will have, A, did the computers count it correctly? And B, was the post-election audit math, randomness, everything else done correctly? Even if it is, I think people walk away, particularly in a close election, a close contentious election, having questions about that, Dan.
I understand, and I agree with you. That's why at the top I said that a full hand count is really the benchmark against which anything else has to be measured. But I think there are ways to do it more efficiently, faster. And, of course, there are a lot of folks out there who just give such powerful pushback to the idea of a full hand recount. We have to recognize that elections belong to everybody.
Right.
And so we have to find a way to come together and improve elections. And I think there are ways to do it to the standard that you're talking about.
Well, I hope so. I know in New Hampshire, where they do the hand counts in some 40% of the towns out there, quite often those towns are finished, completed with their hand counts before the optical scan towns have completed. And there are very few questions about the results in those hand count towns. This conversation, I suspect, will continue, not just throughout this year, but for too many more in the future. Pamela Smith, president of Verified Voting Foundation and VerifiedVoting.org, thank you for your time, as well as my thanks to Dan McRae, president of the Florida Voters Foundation. You can find him and his work and their work at FloridaVoters.org. Thanks, guys.
Thanks so much
for having us on.
So that was my interview with Pam Smith and Dan McRae from earlier this week. Brad Friedman here from bradblog.com, in for Mike Malloy. And I want to make a couple of points here before we go to a break, why this is important. So Palm Beach County, if you can't figure out why this is important, Palm Beach County names the wrong winners of several elections. Only a post-election hand count days later found the problem. The company who makes those optical scanners, Sequoia Voting Systems, which is now owned by Dominion Voting, a Canadian firm, admits the problem was their software. And those machines are used in 14 different states. And frankly, those exact machines are in 14 different states, but pretty much all of the country, if you don't vote on a touchscreen voting machine, which is 100% unverifiable, your vote is probably counted by an optical scan paper ballot system, just like the ones that failed in Florida that they happened to notice. Now, it's pretty big, frankly. I think that Pam Smith there from Verified Voting, an organization meant to improve computer voting and call out all the flaws there, that even she at this point says that she has no basis for confidence at this point in these voting systems that are going to be used all over Wisconsin in the recall elections, that are going to be used all over the country in the presidential elections. I have been raising holy hell about all of this, trying to warn people for nearly a decade. And we had an election this week in Alaska that reminds us again why this stuff matters. I'm going to talk about that after this break. Brad, in for Malloy. Stay with us.
Come gather around, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, so you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. For the times they are a-changing.
One, two, three!
Come right in.
Yeah, nicely done, Tone. They are changing, maybe not for the better. I can't believe it was the 44th anniversary of the Martin Luther King assassination this week. And here we are, 44 years later, still fighting for people's rights, still fighting for people to be able to cast a vote, still fighting to make sure that that vote gets counted and gets counted accurately, and that the citizens know it's been counted accurately. This is insane. So the wrong candidates, the losers, are named the winners down there in Palm Beach County, and we happened to discover it. And when I spoke earlier this week to the supervisor of elections down there, Susan Booker, who was alarmed by this, she said, you know, she had a feeling this has happened before and we haven't noticed. Before they had this post-election audit that was lucky enough, this spot check that was lucky enough to count it, to catch it. And that it was only a hand count that changed those elections and found the right winners. She said that the hand count was 100%. All the ballots were there. It was quick. It was easy. And everybody left knowing who the winner was and who the loser was. Even the loser knew that they lost. There was no questions. Meanwhile, up in Alaska, in Anchorage, Alaska this week, There was a proposition on the ballot for non-discrimination against the LGBT community. Non-discrimination against gay people. How's that? Prop 5. Yes on Prop 5 if you don't want to discriminate against gay and lesbian and bi and transgender folks. A few days before that election, yes on Prop 5 for ending discrimination. Yes on Prop 5 was leading in a right-wing, a conservative poll, 50-41. Looked like it was poised to win this week, 50-41 on Tuesday night, according to the poll just days before. It ended up losing, according to the, up there, it's Diebold optical scan voting systems, 43-57. That's like a 26-point jump. It was supposed to win by 9 points. It ends up losing by 14 points. Now, as it turns out, the no on Prop 5 people, this guy, this is a jerk by the name of Jim Minery up there in Anchorage, was sending out emails on election day telling people, attention young people or first-time voters, you can register and vote on the same at the same location today. It's super easy. Take a few minutes today and stop by a polling station, register to vote. All you need is your Alaska driver's license and cast a no vote on Prop 5. We really need you to vote. Tell at least three of your friends how easy it is. Problem is, you can't register and vote on the same day in Alaska. You have to register 30 days before the election. But the word got out, and ballots ran out all over the city. Because people used what they call question ballots up there, provisional ballots, to cast their vote. They were signing up. They were registering for the first time. Those votes won't be counted because those folks weren't properly registered. And this guy knew it, this Jim Minery, who then went on and lied about it. And said, oh, I got some misinformation. Who knew? Well, you knew, Jim, because a month earlier you put out a notice telling people when the last chance was to register so you could vote in that election. So there weren't a lot of ballots all over the city. 59 precincts reported no ballots. But did the computers report the results correctly, even for those people who did have ballots? Who knows? Because they won't hand count a goddamn ballot. Brad, in for Malloy. Welcome back, Truth Seekers, to your Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman, your friendly citizen, investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around swell fellow, says me, in for Mike tonight, who's having a long weekend. Oh, good Friday to you, and happy Passover out there. We are in tonight. Mike will be back Monday. We are doing some investigation tonight. Because, well, we got a couple of things. Okay, let me give you some business here. We are on the Twitters at the Brad Blog if you want to reach me. And we're going to open up the lines in the next hour to all of you folks at 877-520-1150. Coming up a little bit later this hour, we're going to have Gabriel Ray Goodlatte of The Color of Change on their campaign against the American Legislative Exchange Council. Which is going after your voting rights. It's going after your union rights. It's pushing these horrible stand your ground laws around the country, which are really right to kill laws as I see them. Shoot first laws, as I think some folks call it. Anyway, we're going to be talking about that campaign, which is going well. A lot of corporate sponsors are dropping out of their support for this pretty horrible group, American Legislative Exchange Council. In my opinion, maybe you feel different. We'll find out. Also, we're going to get a report from Marco Paez, who's been down at Santa Monica College, finding out why the hell security guards are pepper spraying students who are trying to ask their own board of trustees why tuition is going up 400%. And it's, you know, just another chapter in this post 9/11 amped up militarized police force on steroids situation that we're seeing across the country. And the folks on the right don't seem to give a rat's ass about it. They're pretending that they're worried about your freedoms are being taken away. But when the freedom to, you know, protest, to speak up, freedom of speech, when people are getting shot in the head with tear gas canisters, tear gassed, pepper sprayed, a four-year-old baby girl was pepper sprayed in this incident at Santa Monica College inside the hallways. Well, we're going to be getting some information on that. But first, we had some big news breaking last night. I think Brad Blog was the first to have it, thanks to my next guest who tipped me off. Do you remember Kathy Nicholas, the woman who suddenly discovered 14,000 votes that she had not reported on election night exactly 1 year ago yesterday? I have since come to learn 1 year ago yesterday in Wisconsin in that Supreme Court election that took place up there. Very contentious race. It would have tipped the balance of the Supreme Court that was looking at the Scott Walker anti-union bill up there. It looked like the challenger, Joanne Kloppenburg, had won on election night by 204 votes. And then the next day, or was it 2 days later, Kathy Nicholas of Waukesha County, Wisconsin, comes out and says, oh, there was 14,000 votes that I forgot to mention from the city of Brookfield. And you know that election that Joanne Kloppenburg won by 204? Turns out she lost it by 7,000 votes instead. A hand count ensued across the entire state. And in Kathy Nicholas's Waukesha County, the most Republican-leaning county in the state of Wisconsin, ballot bags were showing up, torn open, ripped open, hundreds, if not thousands, of ballots exposed. You could reach your hand in, pull them out, switch them around. Serial numbers, security serial numbers were missing, were changed. Security seals were gone. That was Kathy Nicholas. And that wasn't the first time, by the way, that we'd reported on her at bradblog.com. We had reported on her about a year or so earlier when her own county executives came down on her and said, you know, you got to improve. They did an audit of her office. They said, you got to improve the security situation in your office, Kathy Nicholas. You've got you keep all of the results on your personal computer in your office. It was just a mess. Anyway, so that was real bad. She came to national infamy, and we happened to be on the air 1 year ago yesterday with John Washburn, an election integrity advocate from Wisconsin, when all of this was breaking, and he explained it to us because he knows Kathy Nicholas. He actually sat in for her at a county executive meeting at one point. He explained the mess that was going on out there. Well, here we go, a year later, yesterday, and Kathy Nicholas says finally she's going to step aside for the upcoming recall elections in Wisconsin, these contentious, historic elections where Scott Walker, Governor Scott Walker, is his job is on the line. Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clefish, her job is on the line. Four senators, Republican senators in the state Senate, their jobs are on the line. And the balance of the Wisconsin Senate hangs in the balance. So the Democrats could take that back, and those elections begin next month in May, and the general recall election will be June 5th. Kathy Nicholas was set to oversee it. She was set to oversee it with the same type of Sequoia voting systems that we just talked about in the last hour that reported the wrong winners down in Palm Beach County, Florida. But she had such a mess this past Tuesday during the presidential primary, when she had changed her procedures, but they apparently didn't work because she was not able to post results to the county website until beginning at 2 a.m. and the last results were not up until 6 a.m. Poor Kathy Nicholas. County executives have since forced her now to step aside for these next two elections. And we're going to talk about all of this and more with my next guest here, John. Where do I have my papers here? John Washburn. He's an election integrity advocate with Fair Elections of Wisconsin and Wisconsin Citizens for Election Protection. He's an award-winning open records advocate. And he happens to be a Ron Paul Republican. But we like him anyway. He's going to tell us what the hell's going on. Hey, John Washburn, welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show.
Well, I hope this is not the start of an annual tradition.
I know. Every year we're going to have John Washburn on to explain to us how Kathy Nicholas has screwed something up in the state of Wisconsin.
Yeah, I hope that is not the case.
All right. Do I have it right? She was essentially pushed out here, given a few options by the Republican county executives in Waukesha County, correct?
Yeah, yes. The county supervisor, a gentleman named Vrakis.
Dan Vrakis.
Dan Vrakis, yes. Basically said, here's the choices. Step aside, or I will use my bully pulpit to call for your resignation, essentially ceaselessly. Since she's in elected office and he's in elected office, that's about all he can do.
Right.
You really can't remove her, it'd be like saying, I just want to remove the governor, having the Secretary of State saying, Governor, you're out of here. No,
yeah.
Sorry.
You're right. You can't do it. And a lot of people say, why is – yeah, go ahead.
You can still use your bully pulpit to say – I think she should be gone.
Exactly. Well, and a lot of people have been saying, why hasn't she been fired already? Well, she can't. She's an elected official. Now, she is coming up for election later this year. She is apparently going to be overseeing her own election down there, because that's the way it works in Wisconsin. But she won't be in charge of the recall elections, the May 5th primary recall primaries. I'm sorry, the May 8th recall primaries in Wisconsin, and then the recall general election June 5th. She won't be running the ship in Waukesha, the most Republican county in Wisconsin. However, she, with her stepping aside now, it's going to be her the deputy
her
clerk.
Deputy and some unnamed consultants.
An unnamed consultant. Well, let's first...
Unnamed consultants. They're not named at this time.
Okay.
But
well, let's start...
That's part of the press release.
Let's start with this deputy. This deputy is named Kelly Yeager. Who hired Kelly Yeager, and who taught her how to be a county clerk?
I believe the answer is Kathy Nicholas. She's been her deputy for a while.
So this is the woman that Kathy Nicholas hired and trained. She's going to be running the Waukesha elections. Okay, John, should anybody have confidence in the results that are reported by Kelly Yeager and by the Sequoia optical scan computers, the same ones that failed down in Palm Beach? Should anybody have confidence with the results that come out of Wisconsin in May and June during these recalls?
I think the answer is that they epitomize the definition of faith, which is the substance of things hoped for. I hope the vox machina is the vox populi and evidence of things not seen, which are the ballots. I mean, what Dominion admitted to in Palm Beach in their public, their product advisory notice is that if you go into the WinEDS database, and I will quote for it, when the WinEDS database is edited, the contest order on the ballots in the database can become out of sync with the contest order shown on the corresponding paper ballots.
Mm-hmm. And that's WinEDS, that's the central tabulator, that's the brains of this entire Sequoia election system. Sequoia has been bought by Dominion, that's why you refer to Dominion. But WinEDS is the central tabulator, the main software. It creates the ballot definitions, it's where all of the results are collected. And Dominion is saying that software gets out of sync with the actual ballots?
Yes. Once I define the paper ballots and I send them out to the printer and say they're going to be this contest order, if I go into WinEDS and apparently edit it for any reason, I give a couple examples like adding title blocks to the races, but apparently it's any edit.
Mm-hmm.
There is the possibility that the electronic representation of the ballot within WinEDS will become out of sync with what's actually on the paper.
And the result is what? We named the wrong winners like we did in Palm Beach?
The result is that the vote totals for ballot line A appear on the printed reports that the Optech Eagle or Insight scanners print out at the end of the day on ballot line B.
And the only... Yeah, go ahead.
That it could be within the same race or across races.
And so the only way you would know this is to what? Count the paper ballots by hand to make sure?
Correct.
Okay.
I suppose a spot check might possibly catch it if you're lucky, and that's what happened in Palm Beach.
If you're lucky. All right. Well, we're going to find out if Wisconsin, never mind Waukesha, but if Wisconsin at all does these post-election spot checks, or if we're going to have to just trust whatever it is that the computers tell us in these recall elections. I'm speaking with John Washburn from Wisconsin. I'm Brad Friedman. Stay with us.
Some kind of way out of here. Say the Joker to the thief.
We are on the Watchtower here on your Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in from Mike. He'll be back Monday, never fear. Your long national nightmare will not be that long. It's just me for a couple more hours. He'll be back next week, never fear. Coming up in the next hour, Gabriel Ray Goodlatte is going to be joining us. Margo Pius is going to be joining us. We're going to be taking your calls at 877-520-1150. We have more show tonight than we can possibly carry out. So we will be invoking the secret Mike Malloy fourth hour. Those of you who know where to find it, we'll see you there. Okay, so, yes, okay. We are speaking with John Washburn of Fair Elections of Wisconsin about this mess, the latest mess in Wisconsin with Kathy Nicholas now stepping aside. And I should add, John Washburn is a Republican. Okay, he's a libertarian-ish Republican, but a Republican nonetheless.
Ron Paul
only, not libertarian, just a Ron Paul guy, right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well,
I take that back. I have run as a libertarian back in '88 before Congress.
Okay. There you go. Well, we'll talk.
I had the none of the above vote locked up at 1.1%.
Is that right? All right. Well, we will talk about that on another day because we have just a couple of more minutes here, John. Yeah. And you know, as someone who has worked with or I guess sat in for Kathy Nicholas at a county executive meeting, you suggest before we went to the break that you do not have confidence in the results of the elections from her office or any of the other offices around the city, or I'm sorry, around the state, I guess, if they're using these flawed systems, these optical scan systems, unless there's a post-election audit. Does Wisconsin do any post-election audits? Do they bother to count a single paper ballot that has been counted by the op scanners before announcing the results?
In a single ward for a single race for each distinct machine type once every 4 years.
Once every 4 years, they'll check out. So that's only for the presidential election, correct?
Correct. And it's done usually in the January, February timeframe of the year following. So they will do an audit of the November 2012 election sometime in January and February of 2013. And it will be only one ward, one race, one or two races. There's actually two possible races. And then it's for each possible machine type. So if you've got an Optech Edge combination, we'll put all those in one bucket, pull one. So poor city of Peshtigo, since they're the only one who has the ABC advantage, they always audit because they're the only one.
Well, I see, because they do one of each machine type. But so there's no real audit there. John, what can, in the minute or so we have left here, because I don't know if I'm going to be back on the Malloy Show here prior to these recall elections happening. What can people in Wisconsin do to try to oversee their elections, to try to have some kind of confidence in whatever the results may be, whoever it is they may be supporting?
Well, there are a couple things that I think any citizen can do that would be helpful.
Go.
One is show up for the closing of the ballots, the closing of the elections at 8 o'clock. You know, they'll say, here, your polling is now closed. At that point, an open meeting has started. Turn on your camera.
Do they really say, hear you?
Some do, some don't. It's a bit of style there. But
all right. I like that.
They do say, you know, or they'll put a person at the end of the line and say, polls are closed. Okay. Anyone who comes in after me is, I'm sorry, doors are closed.
All right. So so go at the polls closed. Be there when the polls close. It becomes an open meeting with a camera, with a cell phone camera. Yeah, go.
The best digital camera you can get.
Okay.
And it's an open meeting because what has now convened is the local board of canvassers.
I got 20 seconds. What can they do at that meeting? Go.
Record what you see. If you see anything weird, insist that it be put on the inspector's report, because if it ain't on the official election report, it didn't happen. That's the legal status of the event.
So
those are the two things you can do.
Take photos like crazy. I would also add working as a poll worker will help, and being there throughout the day. We're going to talk more about it, no doubt, in the future. John Washburn of Fair Elections Wisconsin, fairelectionswi.com. Thanks, John.
Thank you.
All right, Brad in for Mike. Stay with us. Tony always plays music like that at this point of the show to sort of calm me down a little bit. Sometimes I need it. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com sitting in for Mike Malloy tonight. Delighted to be here. Delighted you could join us. And by the way, stop by. We've got a chat room going on at bradblog.com. We would love to see you over there. I haven't been mentioning it much tonight, so it's quieter than usual, which means there are plenty of seats. Come on by. We'd love to see you. You can tweet me on the Brad blog. That's who I am over there, where I've also put up a photo of myself here in Stephanie's in front of her new Talking Liberally current TV show backdrop. Where we're using her studio. Don't tell her we were here. Okay. if a lot of you folks out there, I'm sure, have been following this. I was going to say horrible folks, but we'll find out how horrible they are. The American Legislative Exchange Council, this corporate lobbying group who is working with legislators all around the country to put forward these horrible disenfranchising polling place photo ID restriction bills, these stand your ground right to kill bills all over the country. Basically, they put together model templates for legislation, and they were founded by a guy named Paul Weyrich. Oh, I should have had the audio standing by. If you can find it over there, Tony, do. But Paul Weyrich, we've got audio of him. You happen to have it there? No? Okay. Back in 1980, saying that he doesn't want everyone to vote. When everyone votes, their chances of winning on the right go down. So he's not talking about winning because they have better policies, because, Republicans have the right direction for the future. No, he was talking about keeping the voting populace from turning out. And that's exactly what these photo ID restriction bills do. Finally, there is some pushback against some of the folks who are pushing these horrible disenfranchising bills that rob your right to vote. That Alec has been pushing out there. The folks at Color of Change, colorofchange.org, have their campaign underway right now. And it's so far, it seems to be the pressure is doing pretty well. As of today, the fourth major corporate sponsor has dropped their support of Alec. That would be Intuit, who makes Quicken and TurboTax and so forth. They joined Coca-Cola and Pepsi and who was it? Kraft Foods earlier this week, who dropped their support for Alec. Hopefully there'll be more to come. We'll find out with my next guest, Gabriel Ray Goodlatte. He is the director of strategy of colorofchange.org and for their anti-Alec campaign, which seems to be doing pretty well so far. Gabriel, welcome, sir, to the Mike Malloy Show.
Hi, Brad. Good to be with you.
Great to have you here. I appreciate you coming in on a Friday night, on a good Friday night. But this is great news now, isn't it? These corporate sponsors that are dropping their support of the American Legislative Exchange Council?
It is. It's very exciting, and it's a really good first step. And now, you know, we are calling on all remaining corporations that are continuing to fund and support ALEC to follow suit. And we're going to be pushing hard to make sure that they do.
And there are a lot of them. There are tons of them. Just to give you some idea of sort of the top level support here, BP, of course, Reynolds American, Allergan, Altria, AT&T, Bayer, Chevron, ExxonMobil, Lumina Foundation, Peabody Pharma, State Farm, Visa, Walmart, the list goes on and on. You can check it out, of course, over at Color for Change. And Think Progress has been doing a great job of covering what's going on at ALEC as well. let me ask you a tough question, Gabriel. What is wrong with ALEC? Anything?
Well, the problem with ALEC is that there's a lot of problems with ALEC. I mean, you can start with what they've been involved in pushing, the laws they've been involved in pushing.
Mm-hmm.
Voter ID laws have the effect of making it harder to vote, raising barriers to voting, and they disproportionately affect African Americans, Latinos, the poor, the disabled, the elderly, most people who have any kind of disadvantage in our society already.
Right, but they have...
Yeah,
go ahead.
And so ALEC has been instrumental in spreading these laws to... many states across the country. They were also behind the spread of the Stand Your Ground law, or I've been referring to it as the Shoot First law,
right,
that has prevented justice for Trayvon Martin in Florida. They worked with the NRA to spread that law all over the place. And they're doing it behind the scenes. They're doing it outside the public view.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing it with support of some of the largest corporations that are everyday household names that everyone supports, well, not everyone, but many people support with their consumer dollars. And so our message to these corporations is that they can't be taking black folks' money by day and building their businesses off of it and taking their vote at night.
Well, now, there isn't, and the reason I ask you that question that way, we're speaking with Gabriel Ray Goodlatte of colorofchange.org. The reason I ask the question that way is because what ALEC is doing here, as far as I know, it's not really illegal, right? They have the right to, they're essentially funneling corporate money into this big organization that then works with these legislators, that then these legislators go out and introduce all of these insidious and insipid bills that take away rights from Americans. But none of it is illegal. This is what we have allowed to become of our electoral system and our political system. Is it not?
It's true. You know, it's not illegal, but I would say that it's something that I think a lot of the corporations that are supporting ALEC may not actually know the full range of what they've been supporting. A lot of corporations got involved because they wanted to push some mm-hmm. business, you know, pro-business legislation that maybe affects their particular industry. And so a big part of what we've been trying to do is educate corporations about all the policies that ALEC is involved in
mm-hmm.
that their consumers would not be comfortable supporting. And so, while ALEC isn't doing anything illegal, I think they're doing something that wouldn't be sustainable when the public's attention is drawn to it.
And you make a good point that a lot of these companies, and I think there were some of the statements from Pepsi and Intuit, who said basically they had a specific reason for joining ALEC, and these other, you know, and that specific reason did not have to do with disenfranchising voters. So I'm glad that are you guys actually going through, is Color of Change actually going through to all of these corporations, some that I didn't name previously, Dow, ConocoPhillips, Time Warner, WellPoint, Amazon.com is on here, HP, Kraft Foods. Are you guys actually going to each of these corporations and asking them to withdraw, or is there a campaign, a letter-writing campaign, or both?
It's kind of both. So in November is actually when the campaign began, and that's mm-hmm. when we asked our members to sign a petition to all companies that support ALEC, asking them to leave because of their involvement in voter suppression. And then since then, we've been contacting as many companies as we can privately to kind of have a conversation with them convey our members' concerns to them and make sure they actually understand what they're supporting, and that we give them a reasonable chance to act and do the right thing before we target them publicly. And then, as you've seen this week, we've started to reach the point where we have started to target some corporations publicly.
Mm-hmm.
We targeted Coca-Cola mm-hmm. earlier this week and had our members start making phone calls to Coca-Cola, because our conversation with Coca-Cola had reached a point where it didn't seem like they were interested in acting. And, you know, it turns out they were, and we're glad that they did. And news also broke this week then that Pepsi and Kraft had pulled out, and mm-hmm. those were both companies that we had been talking with as well. And so moving forward, we're going to be continuing to push on all companies that support Alec to leave.
Well, obviously, it probably goes without saying, Koch Industries is a huge supporter of the American Legislative Exchange Council, Union Pacific, Walgreens, Norfolk Southern, Merck, Lilly, Kraft Foods, no longer. Way to go, Kraft Foods. Way to go, Pepsi. Way to go, Coke. And way to go into it. But there's a lot of people who are still on this list, a lot of companies who need to be, who folks need to let them know they're not happy with their involvement in this this group, who may or may not be breaking any laws, but they're, you know, pushing for to rob people's voting rights. And I'm just appalled by that. Now, that said, I'm looking, and I know Ernie Canning at bradblog.com has been looking at a complaint that's been filed in the state of Wisconsin, back to Wisconsin, against 43 Republican legislators. You can go read it over there, that talks about the fact that Alec is giving away these scholarships, inviting legislators to come out on these trips around the country, and that they're not being reported appropriately, and they may be violating the law. I'd urge you to go check out that report at Brad Blog, because that may be happening in other states as well. Gabriel Ray Goodlatte, where can folks specifically participate, join in, and what can they do to help here for your Alec campaign?
If you go to colorofchange.org/sign/Alec, or if you just go to colorofchange.org, there should be a link on the front page. You can sign our petition to corporations, calling on them to pull out of Alec, and then we will keep you up to date on ways that you can hold accountable corporations that have refused to do so. And we're going to be announcing new targets in our campaign next week.
So you're specifically targeting corporations one at a time. I just rattled off a whole bunch of them. I'm going at it targeting all of them, by the way. I don't think anybody should be involved with this group. What they do is really just invidious and undermines the very core of this country, the very American values that we have, or at least pretend to have, in this country. Gabriel Ray Goodlatte, check out that campaign at colorofchange.org/sign/Alec, A-L-E-C. Do I have it right?
That's right, and that's sign as in S-I-G-N.
S-I-G-N, to sign the petition. Gabriel, thanks a bunch. Really appreciate your time. Keep up the good work, my friend, and let me know how I can help.
Okay, thanks a lot, Brad.
All right. You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman in for Mike. Much more straight ahead. Do stay with us.
Tell me why. What does every single little tiny little ever thing I hold on?
Welcome back. It's your Mike Malloy Show. Brad of bradblog.com in for Mike. Your call's coming up next hour. Get in line now. Don't wait. 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. Whatever you want to talk about. I've been talking a lot about elections tonight because, oh, you know, it's election season. But 877-520-1150 if you want to talk about that or anything else. Get in line right now. Don't wait. Okay. We got just a few minutes here, but Margot Paez, our super-duper associate producer and KPF contributor to the KPFK Evening News out here in Los Angeles, the Pacifica radio affiliate, she has been spending some time down in Santa Monica, where we had this. Oh, hi. Hi, you can say hi.
Hi, I'm here.
You're here. She's here with us. She's been spending time down at Santa Monica College where we had this horrible pepper spray incident.
Yes.
It was really bad. You did a report for the KPFK Evening News. We're going to play that report and then come back to talk to you with the latest updates you've had since this report was filed.
A Santa Monica College Police Department officer pepper sprayed a crowd of at least 100 students inside the business building of Santa Monica College, where the college's Board of Trustees was holding a monthly meeting to discuss a new two-tier tuition program. At least 30 students were hit with the pepper spray, including a 4-year-old child, and 2 were taken to hospital to be treated for respiratory-related side effects. Mariel Gomez, a student at the college, describes the incident.
I fell to the floor. I would have never imagined I was going to get pepper spray, first of all. And so when I got pepper spray, I was trying to catch my breath, and I couldn't. There was so much pepper spray that you could even see it. I got into my eye, and I fell to the floor because I couldn't see anymore. One of the actual students came back for me and put me into the bathroom to wash it off. So it was the worst sensation.
The school says students were not allowed into the public meeting because of overcrowding issues. Despite handing out tickets that would have allowed 10 students into the room, police still refused to let anyone in. Frustrated, the students began to physically force their way in. The 3 officers told students to get back, but they continued to push. According to students, no warning was given that they were about to be hit with the spray. The Santa Monica Police Department was unavailable for comment, but in a written statement, college president Chu Sang describes the students' acts as unlawful. According to John Sullivan, a retired deputy chief who now works as an expert witness on police management practices, the deployment of a pepper spray canister is considered enough of a warning.
Procedure or mandate that they have to give a warning. Usually when the officers pull the pepper spray out of their holster and they have it in their hand, that should be adequate warning to a reasonable person.
The proposed two-tier system is said to be the first of its kind. Santa Monica College administrators say that the system is the best option to combat the sharp decrease in state funding to the state's community colleges. State funding has dropped over $800 million in the last 3 years. The two-tier system would offer certain courses at a higher price, around 4 times the current cost per unit. Trustee David Finkel says the students refuse to understand the situation. Jasmine Delgado, vice president of the college's associated students, disagrees, saying that students were not included in developing a solution.
I mean, we weren't even involved in the shared governance process to, you know, even kind of formulate the policies for this, and we found out pretty last minute that this was going to be put in place.
The use of pepper spray in wartime is banned under the Geneva Convention, and in 1995, the ACLU noted in a report that an Army study concluded that pepper spray's active ingredient is capable of producing carcinogenic effects, sensitization, cardiovascular toxicity, as well as possible human fatalities. San Maria Gomez, a student organizer from the Santa Monica Student Organizing Committee, says that while the pepper spray caught the demonstrators off guard, it was not surprising. She says that police harassment has been happening ever since they began organizing students against the fee hikes.
Intimidating us. The first time we met up in a circle, it was 50 students of us just sitting in the yard, quietly just sitting up in a circle, and they were in their motorcycles circling around us, trying to intimidate us. Whenever I just post out flyers trying to outreach to my peers, they're literally going after, behind me, because it's a matter of seconds, not a matter of hours. In a matter of seconds, they're ripping down the flyers that we post.
The Board of Trustees says that it plans to pay the hospital bills of students who were injured during the incident. Students say that they will not be deterred in their protest of the two-tier fee system and will continue to make their voices heard until the system is dropped. In Los Angeles, I'm Margo Paez, Pacifica Radio, KPFK.
Well done, Margo. Good report. So showing pepper spray, just showing the can, that's a warning. That's enough.
That is apparently enough, according to this former police chief from Nevada.
According to the police chief from Nevada. This post-9/11 ramped up on steroids, militarized police force that we have. These guys, they aren't even police. They're campus security.
No,
this is crazy.
Actually, the correction is that they are, in fact, police
officers.
They are sworn in as peacekeepers, and they do carry weapons. They have a firearm on them.
Yeah. Well, I still do not approve. Now, you said you had we're short on time. You got a quick update.
So the president of the Board of Trustees, Chu Sang, has decided that they are not going to implement this, even though they voted to approve it last month.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to allow the community of the school to finally have a discussion.
Oh, how thoughtful.
Yes. And what I found out is that in 2008, the Board of Trustees authorized to provide $2.5 million to the city of Malibu for construction of a wastewater facility. And they are planning to build a $25 million campus in Malibu.
So they're paying a lot of money for stuff, and then they're charging the students, raising their tuition 400%.
Yes.
And not let and spraying them with pepper spray if they have a thought about it.
Right.
I gotta get to a break. Margo Paez of the KPFK Evening News. Well done. Brad in for Mike. Your calls straight ahead. Welcome back, Truth Seekers, to your Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman, your friendly citizen, investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around swell fellow, says me, in for Mike tonight, who's having a long weekend. Oh, good Friday to you, and happy Passover out there. We are in tonight. Mike will be back Monday. We are doing some investigation tonight. Because, well, we got a couple of things. Okay, well, let me give you some business here. We are on the Twitters at the Brad Blog, if you want to reach me. And we're going to open up the lines in the next hour to all of you folks at 877-520-1150. Coming up a little bit later this hour, we're going to have Gabriel Ray Goodlatte of The Color of Change on their campaign against the American Legislative Exchange Council. Which is going after your voting rights. It's going after your union rights. It's pushing these horrible stand your ground laws around the country, which are really right to kill laws as I see them. Shoot first laws, as I think some folks call it. Anyway, we're going to be talking about that campaign, which is going well. A lot of corporate sponsors are dropping out of their support for this pretty horrible group, American Legislative Exchange Council. In my opinion, maybe you feel different. We'll find out. Also, we're going to get a report from Marco Paez, who's been down at Santa Monica College, finding out why the hell security guards are pepper spraying students who are trying to ask their own board of trustees why tuition is going up 400%. And it's, just another chapter in this post 9/11 amped up, militarized police force on steroids situation that we're seeing across the country. And the folks on the right don't seem to give a rat's ass about it. They're pretending that they're worried about your freedoms are being taken away. But when the freedom to, protest, to speak up, freedom of speech, when people are getting shot in the head with tear gas canisters, tear gassed, pepper sprayed, a four-year-old baby girl was pepper sprayed in this incident at Santa Monica College inside the hallways. Well, we're going to be getting some information on that. But first, we had some big news breaking last night. I think Brad Blog was first to have it, thanks to my next guest who tipped me off. Do you remember Kathy Nicholas, the woman who suddenly discovered 14,000 votes that she had not reported on election night exactly 1 year ago yesterday? I have since come to learn. 1 year ago yesterday in Wisconsin in that Supreme Court election that took place up there. Very contentious race. It would have tipped the balance of the Supreme Court that was looking at the Scott Walker anti-union bill up there. It looked like the challenger, Joanne Kloppenburg, had won on election night by 204 votes. And then the next day, or was it 2 days later, Kathy Nicholas of Waukesha County, Wisconsin, comes out and says, oh, there was 14,000 votes that I forgot to mention from the city of Brookfield. And you know that election that Joanne Kloppenburg won by 204? Turns out she lost it by 7,000 votes instead. A hand count ensued across the entire state. And in Kathy Nicholas's Waukesha County, the most Republican-leaning county in the state of Wisconsin, ballot bags were showing up torn open, ripped open, hundreds if not thousands of ballots exposed. You could reach your hand in, pull them out, switch them around. Serial numbers, security serial numbers were missing, were changed. Security seals were gone. That was Kathy Nicholas. And that wasn't the first time, by the way, that we'd reported on her at bradblog.com. We had reported on her about a year or so earlier when her own county executives came down on her and said, you know, you got to improve. They did an audit of her office. They said, you got to improve the security situation in your office, Kathy Nicholas. You've got you keep all of the results on your personal computer in your office. It was just a mess. Anyway, so that was real bad. She came to national infamy, and we happened to be on the air 1 year ago yesterday with John Washburn, an election integrity advocate from Wisconsin, when all of this was breaking, and he explained it to us because he knows Kathy Nicholas. He actually sat in for her at a county executive meeting at one point. He explained the mess that was going on out there. Well, here we go, a year later. Yesterday, and Kathy Nicholas says finally she's going to step aside for the upcoming recall elections in Wisconsin, these contentious, historic elections where Scott Walker, Governor Scott Walker, is his job is on the line. Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clefish, her job is on the line. Four senators, Republican senators in the state Senate, their jobs are on the line, and the balance of the Wisconsin Senate hangs in the balance. So the Democrats could take that back, and those elections begin next month in May, and the general recall election will be June 5th. Kathy Nicholas was set to oversee it. She was set to oversee it with the same type of Sequoia voting systems that we just talked about in the last hour that reported the wrong winners down in Palm Beach County, Florida. But she had such a mess this past Tuesday during the presidential primary, when she had changed her procedures, but they apparently didn't work because she was not able to post results to the county website until beginning at 2 a.m. and the last results were not up until 6 a.m. Poor Kathy Nicholas. County executives have since forced her now to step aside for these next two elections, and we're going to talk about all of this and more with my next guest here. John, where do I have my papers here? John Washburn. He's an election integrity advocate with Fair Elections of Wisconsin and Wisconsin Citizens for Election Protection. He's an award-winning open records advocate. And he happens to be a Ron Paul Republican, but we like him anyway. He's going to tell us what the hell's going on. Hey, John Washburn, welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show.
Well, I hope this is not the start of an annual tradition.
I know. Every year we're going to have John Washburn on to explain to us how Kathy Nicholas has screwed something up in the state of Wisconsin.
Yeah, I hope that is not the case.
All right. Do I have it right? She was essentially pushed out here, given a few options by the Republican county executives in Waukesha County. Correct?
Yeah, yes. The county supervisor, a gentleman named Vrakis.
Dan Vrakis.
Dan Vrakis,
yes.
Basically said, here's the choices. Step aside, or I will use my bully pulpit to call for your resignation, essentially ceaselessly. Since she's in elected office and he's in elected office, that's about all he can do.
Right.
You really can't remove her, It'd be like saying, I just want to remove the governor, having the Secretary of State saying, Governor, you're out of here. No,
yeah.
Sorry.
You're right. You can't do it. And a lot of people say, why is – yeah, go ahead.
You can still use your bully pulpit to say, I think she should be gone.
Exactly. Well, and a lot of people have been saying, why hasn't she been fired already? Well, she can't. She's an elected official. Now, she is coming up for election later this year. She is apparently going to be overseeing her own election down there because that's the way it works in Wisconsin. But she won't be in charge of the recall elections, the May 5th primary recall primaries. I'm sorry, the May 8th recall primaries in Wisconsin, and then the recall general election June 5th. She won't be running the ship in Waukesha, the most Republican county in Wisconsin. However, she, with her stepping aside now, it's going to be her the deputy clerk.
Deputy and some unnamed consultants.
An unnamed consultant. Well, let's first
unnamed consultants. They're not named at this time.
Okay.
But
well, let's start.
That's part of the press release.
Let's start with this deputy. This deputy is named Kelly Yeager. Who hired Kelly Yeager, and who taught her how to be a county clerk?
I believe the answer is Kathy Nicholas. She's been her deputy for a while.
So this is the woman that Kathy Nicholas hired. She's and trained. She's going to be running the Waukesha elections. Okay, John, should anybody have confidence in the results that are reported by Kelly Yeager and by the Sequoia optical scan computers, the same ones that failed down in Palm Beach? Should anybody have confidence with the results that come out of Wisconsin in May and June during these recalls?
I think the answer is that they epitomize the definition of faith, which is the substance of, you know, things hoped for. I hope the vox machina is the vox populi and evidence of things not seen, which are the ballots. I mean, what Dominion admitted to in Palm Beach in their public, their product advisory notice is that if you go into the WinEDS database, and I will quote for it, when the WinEDS database is edited, the contest order on the ballots in the database can become out of sync with the contest order shown on the corresponding paper ballots.
Mm-hmm. And that's WinEDS, that's the central tabulator, that's the brains of this entire Sequoia election system. Sequoia's been bought by Dominion, that's why you refer to Dominion. But WinEDS is the central tabulator, the main software. It creates the ballot definitions, it's where all of the results are collected. And Dominion is saying, that software gets out of sync with the actual ballots?
Yes. Once I define the paper ballots and I send them out to the printer and say they're going to be this mm-hmm. contest order, if I go into WinEDS and apparently edit it for any reason,
mm-hmm.
I give a couple examples like adding title blocks to the races, but apparently it's any edit.
Mm-hmm.
There is the possibility that the electronic representation of the ballot within WinEDS will become out of sync with what's actually on the paper.
And the result is what? We named the wrong winners like we did in Palm Beach?
The result is that the vote totals for ballot line A
mm-hmm.
appear on the printed reports that the Optech Eagle or Insight
right.
scanners print out at the end of the day on ballot line B.
And the only go ahead.
And that could be within the same race or across race.
And so the only way you would know this is to what? Count the paper ballots by hand to make sure?
Correct.
Okay.
I suppose a spot check might possibly catch it if you're lucky, and that's what happened in Palm Beach.
If you're lucky. All right. Well, we're going to find out if Wisconsin, never mind Waukesha, but if Wisconsin at all does these post-election spot checks, or if we're going to have to just trust whatever it is that the computers tell us in these recall elections. I'm speaking with John Washburn from Wisconsin. I'm Brad Friedman. Stay with us.
Some kind of way out of here. Say the Joker to the thief.
We are on the Watchtower here on your Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in from Mike. He'll be back Monday. Never fear. Your long national nightmare will not be that long. It's just me for a couple more hours. He'll be back next week, never fear. Coming up in the next hour, Gabriel Ray Goodlatte is going to be joining us. Margo Pius is going to be joining us. We're going to be taking your calls at 877-520-1150. We have more show tonight than we can possibly carry out. So we will be invoking the secret Mike Malloy fourth hour. Those of you who know where to find it, we'll see you there. Okay. So, yes. Okay. We are speaking with John Washburn of Fair Elections of Wisconsin about this mess, the latest mess in Wisconsin with Kathy Nicholas now stepping aside. And I should add, John Washburn is a Republican. Okay, he's a libertarian-ish Republican, but a Republican nonetheless.
Ron Paul.
Ron Paul, only, not libertarian, just a Ron Paul guy, right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, well,
I take that back. I have run as a libertarian back in 88 before Congress.
Okay, there you go. Well, we'll talk
about I had the none of the above vote locked up at 1.1%.
Is that right? All right, well, we will talk about that on another day because we have just a couple of more minutes here, John. Yeah. And, you know, as someone who has worked with or, I guess, sat in for Kathy Nicholas at a county executive meeting, you suggest, before we went to the break, that you do not have confidence in the results of the elections from her office or any of the other offices around the city, or I'm sorry, around the state, I guess, if they're using these flawed systems, these optical scan systems, unless there's a post-election audit. Does Wisconsin do any post-election audits? Do they bother to count a single paper ballot that has been counted by the op scanners before announcing the results?
In a single ward for a single race for each distinct machine type once every 4 years.
Once every 4 years, they'll check out. So that's only for the presidential election, correct?
Correct. And it's done usually in the January, February timeframe of the year following. So they will do an audit of the November 2012 election sometime in January and February of 2013. And it will be only one ward, one race, one or two races. There's actually two possible races. And then it's for each possible machine type. So if you've got an Optech Edge combination, we'll put all those in one bucket, pull one. So poor city of Peshtigo, since they're the only one who has the AVC advantage, they always audit because they're the only one.
Well, I see, because they do one of each machine type. But so there's no real audit there. John, what can, in the minute or so we have left here, because I don't know if I'm going to be back on the Malloy Show here prior to these recall elections happening. What can people in Wisconsin do to try to oversee their elections, to try to have some kind of confidence in whatever the results may be, whoever it is they may be supporting?
Well, there are a couple things that I think any citizen can do that would be helpful.
Go.
One is show up for the closing of the ballots, the closing of the elections at 8 o'clock. You know, they'll say, here, your polling is now closed. At that point, an open meeting has started. Turn on your camera.
Do they really say, hear you?
Some do, some don't. Bit of style there.
But all right. Oh, I like that.
They do say, you know, or they'll put a person at the end of the line and say, polls are closed. Okay. Anyone who comes in after me is, I'm sorry. Doors are closed.
All right. So so go at the polls closed. Be there when the polls close. It becomes an open meeting with a camera, with a cell phone camera. Yeah, go.
The best digital camera you can get.
Okay.
And it's an open meeting because what has now convened is the local board of canvassers.
I got 20 seconds. What can they do at that meeting? Go.
Record what you see. If you see anything weird, insist that it be put on the inspector's report, because if it ain't on the official election report, it didn't happen. That's the legal status of the event.
So
those are the two things you can do.
Take photos like crazy. I would also add working as a poll worker will help, and being there throughout the day. We're going to talk more about it, no doubt, in the future. John Washburn of Fair Elections Wisconsin, fairelectionswi.com. Thanks, John.
Thank you.
All right, Brad in for Mike. Stay with us. Tony always plays music like that at this point of the show to sort of calm me down a little bit. Sometimes I need it. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com sitting in for Mike Malloy tonight. Delighted to be here. Delighted you could join us. And by the way, stop by. We've got a chat room going on at bradblog.com. We would love to see you over there. I haven't been mentioning it much tonight, so it's quieter than usual, which means there are plenty of seats. Come on by. We'd love to see you. You can tweet me on the Brad blog. That's who I am over there, where I've also put up a photo of myself here in Stephanie's in front of her new Talking Liberally current TV show backdrop. We're using her studio. Don't tell her we were here. Okay, a lot of you folks out there, I'm sure, have been following this. These folks, these well, I was going to say horrible folks, but we'll find out how horrible they are. The American Legislative Exchange Council, this corporate lobbying group who is working with legislators all around the country to put forward these horrible disenfranchising polling place photo ID restriction bills, these stand your ground right to kill bills all over the country. Basically, they put together model templates for legislation, and they were founded by a guy named Paul Weyrich. Oh, I should have had the audio standing by. If you can find it over there, Tony, do. But Paul Weyrich, you know, we've got audio of him. You happen to have it there? No? Okay. Back in 1980, saying that he doesn't want everyone to vote. When everyone votes, their chances of winning on the right go down. So he's not talking about winning because they have better policies, because, you know, Republicans have the right direction for the future. No, he was talking about keeping the voting populace from turning out. And that's exactly what these photo ID restriction bills do. Finally, there is some pushback against some of the folks who are pushing these horrible disenfranchising bills that rob your right to vote. That Alec has been pushing out there. The folks at Color of Change, colorofchange.org, have their campaign underway right now. And it's so far, it seems to be the pressure is doing pretty well. As of today, the fourth major corporate sponsor has dropped their support of Alec. That would be Intuit, who makes Quicken and TurboTax and so forth. They joined Coca-Cola and Pepsi and who was it? Kraft Foods earlier this week, who dropped their support for Alec. Hopefully there'll be more to come. We'll find out with my next guest, Gabriel Ray Goodlatt. He is the director of strategy of colorofchange.org and for their anti-Alec campaign, which seems to be doing pretty well so far. Gabriel, welcome, sir, to the Mike Malloy Show.
Hi, Brad. Good to be with you.
Great to have you here. I appreciate you coming in on a Friday night, on a good Friday night. But this is great news now, isn't it? These corporate sponsors that are dropping their support of the American Legislative Exchange Council?
It is. It's very exciting, and it's a really good first step. And now, you know, we are calling on all remaining corporations that are continuing to fund and support Alec to follow suit. And we're going to be pushing hard to make sure that they do.
And there are a lot of them. There are tons of them. Just to give you some idea of sort of the top level support here, BP, of course, Reynolds American, Allergan, Altria, AT&T, Bayer, Chevron, ExxonMobil, Lumina Foundation, Peabody Pharma, State Farm, Visa, Walmart, the list goes on and on. You can check it out, of course, over at Color for Change. And Think Progress has been doing a great job of covering what's going on at Alec as well. let me ask you a tough question, Gabriel. What is wrong with Alec? Anything?
Well, the problem with Alec is that there's a lot of problems with Alec. I mean, you can start with what they've been involved in pushing, the laws they've been involved in pushing.
Mm-hmm.
Voter ID laws have the effect of making it harder to vote, raising barriers to voting, and they disproportionately affect African Americans, Latinos, the poor, the disabled, the elderly, most people who have any kind of disadvantage in our society already.
Right, but they have...
going to be...
Yeah, go ahead.
And so Alec has been instrumental in spreading these laws to many states across the country, They were also behind the spread of the Stand Your Ground law, or I've been referring to it as the Shoot First law.
Right.
That has prevented justice for Trayvon Martin in Florida. And they worked with the NRA to spread that law all over the place. And they're doing it behind the scenes. They're doing it outside the public view.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing it with support of some of the largest corporations that are everyday household names that everyone supports. Well, not everyone, but many people support with their consumer dollars. And so our message to these corporations is that they can't be taking black folks' money by day and building their businesses off of it and taking their vote at night.
Well, now, there isn't, and the reason I ask you that question that way, we're speaking with Gabriel Ray Goodlatte of colorofchange.org. The reason I ask the question that way is because what Alec is doing here, as far as I know, it's not really illegal, right? They have the right to, they're essentially funneling corporate money into this big organization that then works with these legislators, that then these legislators go out and introduce all of these insidious and insipid bills that take away rights from Americans. But none of it is illegal. This is what we have allowed to become of our electoral system and our political system. Is it not?
It's true. You know, it's not illegal, but I would say that it's something that I think a lot of the corporations that are supporting Alec may not actually know the full range of what they've been supporting. A lot of corporations got involved because they wanted to push some business, you know, pro-business legislation that maybe affects their particular industry. And so a big part of what we've been trying to do is educate corporations about all the policies that Alec is involved in that their consumers would not be comfortable supporting. And so, while Alec isn't doing anything illegal, I think they're doing something that wouldn't be sustainable when the public's attention is drawn to it.
And you make a good point that a lot of these companies, and I think there were some of the statements from Pepsi and Intuit, who said basically they had a specific reason for joining Alec, and these other, you know, and that specific reason did not have to do with disenfranchising voters. So I'm glad that are you guys actually going through, is Color of Change actually going through to all of these corporations, some that I didn't name previously, Dow, ConocoPhillips, Time Warner, WellPoint, Amazon.com is on here, HP, Kraft Foods. Are you guys actually going to each of these corporations and asking them to withdraw, or is there a campaign, a letter-writing campaign, or both?
It's kind of both. So in November is actually when the campaign began, and that's when we asked our members to sign a petition to all companies that support Alec, asking them to leave because of their involvement in voter suppression. And then since then, we've been contacting as many companies as we can privately to kind of have a conversation with them, convey our members' concerns to them, and make sure they actually understand what they're supporting, and that we give them a reasonable chance to act and do the right thing before we target them publicly. And then, as you've seen this week, we've started to reach the point where we have started to target some corporations publicly. We targeted Coca-Cola earlier this week and had our members start making phone calls to Coca-Cola because our conversation with Coca-Cola had reached a point where it didn't seem like they were interested in acting. And, you know, it turns out they were, and we're glad that they did. And news also broke this week then that Pepsi and Kraft had pulled out, and those were both companies that we had been talking with as well. And so moving forward, we're going to be continuing to push on all companies that support Alec to leave.
Well, obviously, it probably goes without saying, Koch Industries is a huge supporter of the American Legislative Exchange Council, Union Pacific, Walgreens, Norfolk Southern, Merck, Lilly, Kraft Foods, no longer. Way to go, Kraft Foods. Way to go, Pepsi. Way to go, Coke. And way to go, Intuit. But there's a lot of people who are still on this list, a lot of companies who need to be, who folks need to let them know they're not happy with their involvement in this this group who may or may not be breaking any laws, but they're pushing for to rob people's voting rights, and I'm just appalled by that. Now, that said, I'm looking, and I know Ernie Canning at bradblog.com has been looking at a complaint that's been filed in the state of Wisconsin, back to Wisconsin, against 43 Republican legislators. You can go read it over there, that talks about the fact that Alec is giving away these scholarships, inviting legislators to come out on these trips around the country, and that they're not being reported appropriately, and they may be violating the law. I'd urge you to go check out that report at Bradblog, because that may be happening in other states as well. Gabriel, Ray Goodlatte, where can folks specifically participate, join in, and what can they do to help here for your ALEC campaign?
If you go to colorofchange.org/sign/ALEC, or if you just go to colorofchange.org, there should be a link on the front page. You can sign our petition to corporations, calling on them to pull out of ALEC, and then we will keep you up to date on ways that you can hold accountable corporations that have refused to do so. And we're going to be announcing new targets in our campaign next week.
So you're specifically targeting corporations one at a time. I just rattled off a whole bunch of them. I'm going at it targeting all of them, by the way. I don't think anybody should be involved with this group. What they do is really just invidious and undermines the very core of this country, the very American values that we have, or at least pretend to have, in this country. Gabriel Ray Goodlatte, check out that campaign at colorofchange.org/sign/ALEC, A-L-E-C. Do I have it right?
That's right, and that's sign as in S-I-G-N.
S-I-G-N, to sign the petition. Gabriel, thanks a bunch. Really appreciate your time. Keep up the good work, my friend, and let me know how I can help.
Okay, thanks a lot, Brad.
All right. You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman in for Mike. Much more straight ahead. Do stay with us.
Tell me why. What is every single little tiny little thing I hold on?
Welcome back. It's your Mike Malloy Show. Brad of bradblog.com in for Mike. Your call's coming up next hour. Get in line now. Don't wait. 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. Whatever you want to talk about. I've been talking a lot about elections tonight because, it's election season. But 877-520-1150 if you want to talk about that or anything else. Get in line right now. Don't wait. Okay. We got just a few minutes here, but Margo Paez, our super-duper associate producer and KPF contributor to the KPFK Evening News out here in Los Angeles, the Pacifica radio affiliate, she has been spending some time down in Santa Monica where we had this. Oh, hi. Hi. You can say hi.
Hi, I'm here.
You're here. She's here with us. She's been spending time down at Santa Monica College where we had this horrible pepper spray incident.
Yes.
It was really bad. You did a report for the KPFK Evening News. We're going to play that report and then come back to talk to you with the latest updates you've had since this report was filed.
A Santa Monica College Police Department officer pepper sprayed a crowd of at least 100 students inside the business building of Santa Monica College, where the college's Board of Trustees was holding a monthly meeting to discuss a new two-tier tuition program. At least 30 students were hit with the pepper spray, including a 4-year-old child, and 2 were taken to hospital to be treated for respiratory-related side effects. Mariel Gomez, a student at the college, describes the incident.
I fell to the floor. I would have never imagined that I was going to get pepper spray, first of all. And so when I got pepper spray, I was trying to catch my breath, and I couldn't. There was so much pepper spray that you could even see it. I got into my eye, and I fell to the floor because I couldn't see anymore. One of the actual students came back for me and put me into the bathroom to wash it off. So it was the worst sensation.
The school says students were not allowed into the public meeting because of overcrowding issues. Despite handing out tickets that would have allowed 10 students into the room, police still refused to let anyone in. Frustrated, the students began to physically force their way in. The three officers told students to get back, but they continued to push. According to students, no warning was given that they were about to be hit with the spray. The Santa Monica Police Department was unavailable for comment, but in a written statement, college president Chu Sang describes the students' acts as unlawful. According to John Sullivan, a retired deputy chief who now works as an expert witness on police management practices, the deployment of a pepper spray canister is considered enough of a warning.
Actual procedure or mandate that they have to give a warning. Usually when the officers pull the pepper spray out of their holster and they have it in their hand, that should be adequate warning to a reasonable person.
The proposed two-tier system is said to be the first of its kind. Santa Monica College administrators say that the system is the best option to combat the sharp decrease in state funding to the state's community colleges. State funding has dropped over $800 million in the last 3 years. The two-tier system would offer certain courses at a higher price, around four times the current cost per unit. Trustee David Finkel says the students refuse to understand the situation. Jasmine Delgado, vice president of the college's associated students, disagrees, saying that students were not included in developing a solution.
I mean, we weren't even involved in the shared governance process to, you know, even kind of formulate the policies for this, and we found out pretty last minute that this was going to be put in place.
The use of pepper spray in wartime is banned under the Geneva Convention, and in 1995, the ACLU noted in a report that an Army study concluded that pepper spray's active ingredient is capable of producing carcinogenic effects, sensitization, cardiovascular toxicity, as well as possible human fatalities. San Maria Gomez, a student organizer from the Santa Monica Student Organizing Committee, says that while the pepper spray caught the demonstrators off guard, it was not surprising. She says that police harassment has been happening ever since they began organizing students against the fee hikes.
Intimidating us. The first time we met up in a circle, it was 50 students of us just sitting in the yard, quietly just sitting up in a circle, and they were in their motorcycles circling around us, trying to intimidate us. Whenever I just post out flyers trying to outreach my peers, they're literally going after, behind me, because it's a matter of seconds, not a matter of hours. In a matter of seconds, they're ripping down the flyers that we post.
The Board of Trustees says that it plans to pay the hospital bills of students who were injured during the incident. Students say that they will not be deterred in their protest of the two-tier fee system and will continue to make their voices heard until the system is dropped. In Los Angeles, I'm Margot Paez, Pacifica Radio, KPFK.
Well done, Margot. Good report. So showing pepper spray, just showing the can, that's a warning. That's enough.
That is apparently enough, according to this former police chief from Nevada.
According to the police chief from Nevada. This post 9/11 ramped up on steroids, militarized police force that we have. These guys, they're not even police. There's campus security.
No,
this is crazy.
Actually, the correction is that they are, in fact, police
officers.
They are sworn in as peacekeepers, and they do carry weapons. They have a firearm on them.
Yeah. Well, I still do not approve. Now, you said we're short on time. You got a quick update.
Yes. So the president of the Board of Trustees, Chu Sang, has decided that they are not going to implement this, even though they voted to approve it last month.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to allow the community of the school to finally have a discussion.
Oh, how thoughtful.
Yes. And what I found out is that in 2008, the Board of Trustees authorized to provide $2.5 million to the city of Malibu for construction of a wastewater facility. And they are planning to build a $25 million campus in Malibu.
So they're paying a lot of money for stuff, and then they're charging the students, raising their tuition 400%.
Yes.
And not let and spraying them with pepper spray if they have a thought about it.
Right.
I gotta get to a break. Margot Paez of the KPFK Evening News. Well done. Brad in for Mike. Your calls straight ahead.